Hello, friends. I'm your lunchtime conversation host, Nanette Weiser. And with me today is a friend and a woman that I respect on the level of mentors and people who've made a difference here and in the world, Bridget Bella. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Nanette. I could say the same about you.
Well, you know, Bridget, you were the founder and publisher of Tampa Bay Business and Wealth, where you basically connected women at the highest levels and empowered women to be their best. So let's talk a little bit. I want to start, first of all, with the fact that you always had the Women Who Win honorees. And today we're going to talk about leadership tips for women in the C-level.
Okay.
Talk to me about some of the great women in this town who have been awarded this in the past. And then let's talk about your tips and your advice and the new business that you're doing.
Okay.
Take it away.
Take it away. So this year's a little different because I wasn't actually a part of the 2026 Women Who Win. I was a part of nominating some amazing women and certainly a part of developing what the program was going to be.
So in the past, in 2025, who were some of the women that you wanted to bring up to this?
We've had some incredible winners. We had Rhea Law, for example, somebody who I consider a mentor and certainly an amazing woman in this town, and somebody who says what she means and means what she says. And if she tells you she'll help you, she does. And I think that's invaluable. That's one of my leadership tips that we'll talk about in a little bit. Carrie Charles is a previous winner of the award. Tammy Fitzpatrick, gosh, Deborah Livingston. I mean, tons of just really amazing women. I think that's something that is unique to Tampa Bay. I think that we have just incredible women in this town, and I think that women do a great job of supporting each other in this town for the most part.
Well, you know, I like to say that you design the rooms where leaders make their next decisive move. And quite honestly, I'm looking forward to having you do a podcast with Radio St. Pete, where you bring some of these amazing women.
Absolutely.
And you talk about the tips because it's what you do best. But let's talk a little bit. So after three decades of working with the performing CEOs and founders, you noticed a pattern. What was that pattern?
I noticed a pattern that there is what I like to refer to as the CEO isolation tax. And my husband, the first time I said that, goes, wait, what? Do I need to know about this tax? What is this tax? I'm like, it's not a real tax. It's a phrase, right? That whole it's lonely at the top thing truly does exist. And making really heavyweight decisions in a vacuum makes you feel very lonely. And so what I've created is an opportunity for those CEOs and business owners to actually have their own peer group, relational peer group that gets together every month, that knows what each other is working on, that holds each other accountable for the things that they are saying or issues, and make sure that at the end of the day, they're walking away with real application, things that they can apply in their business immediately.
No one would know this more than you and I. You know, I came out of San Diego where I was vice president of a news corporation. There were not women there.
Right.
And you have a quote that I want to read to people because whether you're a man or a woman, this is really important. The culture of leadership is not built in public. It is cultivated in private among those who understand its weight. What is the weight of leadership?
Oh, my goodness. That's a big question, Nanette. I think, you know, depending on the size of the workforce that you have, you know, I think the rank and file oftentimes doesn't realize how much their leader truly is concerned about the impact of those decisions and what that will mean for those people and for their families. And, you know, when I think about the businesses that I've impacted, the leaders that I've had the opportunity to work with, the thousands and thousands of people that were their employees and their workforce and the impact that that had, that, you know, trickles out in spiders to their families and every, you know, the conversation at dinner at night and how they feel on Sunday night before they go to bed and whether they're excited to wake up Monday and do it or whether they're going through what everyone calls now Sunday scaries, where
oh, that's 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, you're there, you're weighing, you know, your imposter self against, you know, it doesn't matter where
Absolutely.
You are in the world.
No, it doesn't.
You have four things that you're known for, and I want you to take each one of these. I'm going to talk about them, and you tell me some tips you would offer people. Operator authority. So building an organization means advising from lived experience, not theory. Talk to me about that.
Well, they say those who can do and those who can't teach, right? And that's where the theory comes in. And you think about what you walk out of, just as an example, when you leave college. I can't tell you the number of times my daughter has said to me, "Mom, why didn't they teach me this in school?" Right?
Amen, sister.
why don't we teach those things in school? But the same application applies in this conversation, in that you have to have that lived experience to be an actually effective leader. It can't be something that you write about in a textbook.
Give me an example in your own life of how a lived experience translated to a new business and leadership lesson.
Well, I just learned a big one. For years, I was told that you can't be friends with your employees. And I always thought I was different. And I always thought that my team was different. And I always thought that we operated at a level of trust and security, and that they would never do that to me, right? And that that would never exist, and that would never be a problem. I believe inherently that people are good, but I also believe that inherently, as an employee, they're going to have some jealousy issues of their leader, regardless of how inclusive you are as a leader, how much you try to be their friend as a leader. And my advice now is, don't do that. Be friendly, don't be their friends.
Absolutely. Now, another thing that you, is a pinpoint, sort of, I think of it as a stool with four legs.
Sure.
Strategic access. And this is something that you do very well. Curated introductions, connecting leaders who accelerate enterprise growth across Florida. You've done this with the Women Who Win. You also did it with some other programs that you created. Talk to me about the importance of strategic access and curated introductions in business.
I've done it my whole life, and not just organizationally, right? Not just with the company that I was building or that I was working for. I think there's a tremendous difference between people who make introductions that are not thought out, that are surface level, that are in some way pandering, that are self-serving. And I've never, ever, ever done that. And I don't plan to start now. I really focus on, and I think everyone really should focus on, if I'm going to introduce Nanette to Tim, what is Tim going to get out of it? And what is Nanette going to get out of it? And is there value for both of them?
You know, I love that, because it isn't that you're self-serving or you're, you know, wash my back, I'll wash yours. It's, is there an authentic connection that can be made? You know, Sidney Marcus used to say, if it's not a goodbye for the, you know, customer, it's not a good sale for the company. So I love 100%. That. Another of your tenets is curated communities. And so as the founder of the Executive Collective, you design structured peer environments. This is important, where qualified leaders gain clarity, challenge, and insight in a trusted environment. Talk about that.
Sure. So what I'm working on is putting together curated rooms, as you said, of the right people who are in like-sized businesses, who are in like seats. So there's no one in the room that's not either a business owner, a founder, or a CEO. It's 12 of us that get together in the different cohorts on a monthly basis. And then 2 weeks in, or 2 weeks after our get together, we have what we call a visibility call. And that is to hold people accountable for the things that they said in those meetings that they were going to take care of, which I think is a big differentiator for me. But they all sign confidentiality agreements. It's relatively new, so I haven't had to throw anybody out yet, but you know me well enough to know that I will. If anyone breaches or compromises that, it's really important that it be a safe space where a CEO or a business owner can go in and they have people that they can talk to about the things that they're typically carrying around in silence.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day because I have a friend, excuse me, who's in radio or used to be in radio. And I'm very careful about talking about anything professionally in my life to anybody. And today with social media and the instantaneous, you know, information, this can happen. Talk to me a little bit about how you can become a good leader, tips to be a good leader, and in particular for women, how that challenge is different.
Well, so one of the, excuse me, cohorts that I have put together, and ironically, because so much of my personal brand is around women, people have said that they think the Executive Collective is only for women. So I need to clarify that it's not. My personal brand certainly has always been about uplifting and connecting women to each other and to things that matter and that can help them grow their careers. But the cohorts are also co-ed, so it's not just a female-oriented organization. But I do believe, and the reason that I built what I refer to as the Sovereign Collective, is that women's issues in leadership are very different. And we talk about that being like a man doesn't go to work in the morning and think, did I remember to take the chicken out? Who's picking up Susie? Who's taking Bobby to the football game, right? A man goes to work in the morning and works throughout the day and goes home, and those things are just taken care of. I also use the example of when I was a single mom and running the Tampa Bay Business Journal at the time, and my 16-year-old daughter was just an absolute nightmare. And for me to pretend that that didn't impact my leadership and the way that I led in the organization is it would be completely disingenuous. It had a tremendous impact on it. And so I would try to cobble together these conversations over coffee or a glass of wine that would take me hours to coordinate, right? Where now they know that they've got a group of 11 other women that they can trust that have either been there or are there, and that they can count on to have this conversation confidentially once a month or twice a month.
I know that you have your own little posse that you gather with for Sunday brunch.
I do, yes.
And tell us a little bit about how you've kind of taken that to your personal life and why that Sunday brunch is so important and grounding.
I think it's all important and grounding. I'm taking a Sprinter van with eight women to Sarasota tomorrow for the afternoon. I think there's something so powerful in the conversations that can take place in smaller, curated environments. Always, whether that's brunch, whether that's a Sprinter van to Sarasota, whether that's a roundtable group once a month. And again, it doesn't have to be just women. I'm really good at hanging out with women.
Well, it's kind of Jerry Seinfeld, you know, conversations in cars, right?
Yeah. So,
and there is something very intimate, personal, and you can kind of reveal it is a good number.
Yeah, I think so too.
Two on two, one on one, the whole thing.
Well, in the power of the 12 in the relational roundtables is that we're not always going to get everybody every right. single month, right? So we're going to end up with about eight or nine.
Right.
And so, yeah, there is something really powerful in my mind to that number of people together.
So I want to share with our listeners, folks, we're talking to Bridget Bello, and we are talking about her new role doing leadership tips for men and women in the C-suite. And she's designed something which allows them to come together as cohorts and explore what leadership means and to curate connections. So you talk about some key themes, the decisions you're not making. What are you avoiding and what is it costing you? Give me an example of that.
Oh, gosh. Well, there's a tried and true one that anyone who has been in a hiring or firing manager role will tell you is that typically they do both of those things too fast or too slow. And when you need to let go of somebody, if you're a good leader, you're really going to lose a lot of sleep over that. And it's going to be a very heavy decision. And, you know, we just had one of those conversations earlier this week of, you know, do I replace the person before I let them go because I don't have the capability for whatever that thing is to get done if that person's not there, and how toxic that can be and how bad that person can impact the rest of the team, and why it's a really bad idea to keep that person there once you know that they need to go. But it's something that they're lying to you if they tell you that they've never not hired too fast or not fired too slow.
I love that piece of advice. So where control is slipping, where have you outgrown your own visibility and what are you no longer seeing clearly? Give me an example of that and how people need to address it.
Well, again, a pretty raw subject right now, right?
Yeah, right.
So recent. I definitely had outgrown what I had built, and it was definitely one of the hardest decisions I ever made was to exit with grace and with love and without resentment. Sometimes that's a minute by minute, hour by hour decision to exit with grace and not with resentment. But, you know, I know, like you said, in the day of social media, everyone is watching. And everyone is waiting to see, right? And it's not that I think that I'm that important. I think everyone is that important
these
days. But
you have a legacy that you now have translated and uplifted into something that I think is so right for this time. You know, media is no longer
It's a dirty business.
It's a dirty business, folks. Media is a dirty business. And honestly, what you're doing now, and I know you do a lot of philanthropy, and we're going to talk about that.
Sure.
This is both a business and a philanthropy that you're working on. So,
well, Nanette, we are in the midst right now of the largest leadership shift that has ever happened
in the history
of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to peak in 5 years. We are supposed to hit the peak. And what I have seen is a lack of transfer of knowledge. I've seen a lack of people actually identifying who is my successor going to be, what is my succession plan, and have I started working on it yet? I won't name anything specific other than to say there's a loved and honored and trusted local brand that the founder passed away very suddenly and unexpected with no plans. And the impact that that has on an organization is shocking. And what it can do to not only to the team, but to the business. And so really everything that I'm working on in the transfer of knowledge space is in hopes of keeping something like that happening to somebody else.
You know, we're working on an America 250 project where we look at the history of things. We had Janet Keeler and Jeff Houck talk about the restaurants, the iconic restaurants and the things that have gone. And that occurred to me right there. It's like, you know, so your kid doesn't want to go in the business. What happens to, you know, we talked to Mazzaro's Robert Smith recently about how a business grew and it had a legacy and they knew that they had a succession and it's going on. I think that's a key, and even at Radio St. Pete, we're all volunteers, we're older. Who's going to, who's going to take that next?
We don't like to think about it because our identity is tied to it and we think that we are invincible. And so we just ignore it, right?
Absolutely. So I love that. So what you've outgrown but kept, I love this business advice. Structures, people, identity, strategy. What no longer fits and why is it still in place? You are the queen of reinvention. Talk to me about some tips for people who want to reinvent themselves.
Well, you know, it always makes me laugh, and this is no slight, and it keeps happening, right? I'm the queen of reinvention because all of the roles that I have had have been so public and so high profile that people feel like, oh, well, you've done this before, right? This is my second reinvention. I'm 55 years old. I've had 3 jobs in my life, right?
Yeah, you were with the Business Journal for a long time.
I'm on the third job of my life, so I'm not the reinvention.
But you have reinvented whatever you've touched. You constantly are looking, well, how can I transform it? How can I do something new? How can I do something better?
I'm a problem solver.
You're a problem solver.
I'm a problem solver. And when I left the Business Journal, all of the things that I translated into founding TBBW were gaps that I had as their trusted leader shared with them that I thought existed and that I was unable to change. This is very similar. There are gaps in some organizations that, for instance, the CEO Council, I absolutely love, near and dear to my heart. I'm on the board, changed my life. They don't serve founders and business owners under a particular headcount or revenue level, right? So there is $1 to $3 million or $1 to $5 million companies, business owners and founders who need this same type of help and this same type of advisory board. I would say even more maybe than the people who are over $5 million.
Absolutely. They're going to grow to $5 million if in fact they can have advice from people like you who have spoken to so many C-level people. I mean, you're like, I think there's a book there.
Yeah, everyone keeps saying that. And it's on the bucket list, Nanette. But it's important that I say, you know, I am very much an abundance attitude and not a scarcity attitude, as we were talking about ahead of time. I am not trying to impact organizations that currently exist. I'm trying to fill the gaps. No different than what I did when I left the Business Journal, no different than any other reiteration of me.
Well, you know, I think it's really important. So Hypatia Collaborative next door does what you do for nonprofits that are here and want to be here.
Yep.
I think that it's that middle, when you watch the Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And I think that this is actually, you're kind of like the working equivalent of the Shark Tank. You look at something and you say, this can go here and this can go here, but they do it on TV. You actually sit people together in a room where they look at each other in the eye and they share their thoughts, secrets, advice, and tips.
And problems.
And problems.
Yeah.
What are the biggest problems, without revealing anything, what do you think are the biggest challenges in this market, in this economy, for businesses and CEOs and C-level people as they look at growing their companies?
I don't think what I'm about to say is unique to this market at all. But I can tell you in all of my conversations of 30 plus years of sitting next to CEOs and business owners, their biggest problem is always people. It's either finding people, keeping people, getting rid of people.
Training people.
It is always people. That is 100%, I think, universal across any business or business owner or CEO that you talk to.
You know, I'm going to talk firsthand. I'm going to brag on my buddy here, Tim Valley. I've been with Radio St. Pete as a volunteer for 2 years, and I had the pleasure of working with a lot of volunteers. But it wasn't until Tim came and took it to another level where it's all about people. You know, you have good people, and then you have people who make it great.
Yeah.
You know, we're filming right now. We're doing video. I have transcripts so I can better represent the people that are here. So it is on the smallest level and the biggest level. It's not workforce development. It's not the Indeed ad. You know, Indeed, I can find a person. Yeah.
It's people development.
It's people development.
I mean, again, that was the premise of TBBW when I founded it, was people don't want to read about companies and deals and numbers and statistics. They want to read about people. They want to read about people's stories.
Absolutely.
And I still believe that, very much so.
So, Bridget, it has been a pleasure to have you today, Bridget Bello, really a woman who has made a difference in both sides of the bay, will continue to make a difference. I think it's fascinating that you've created this kind of collaborative.
Thank you.
Where you're, you know, growing leaders and, as always, growing ourselves.
Absolutely.
So we look forward to having you monthly on a podcast with a guest.
That would be great.
And talking about some of these great things. And I just want to ask you, who, if you could single out two or three people, living or dead, that truly have influenced you as a CEO yourself?
Yeah, I would say two people, both being men. Which I always am quick to point out to other women that our mentors don't always necessarily have to be other women. One just passed away. He was the only, as far as I can find, single radio station owner that still existed like anywhere in the country. He still owned one station. He owned it himself. It was my job in college at KISS 105.3. His name was Doug Gillen, and he literally changed the trajectory of my career when I was 21 years old. Just an incredible man. Another one I would say is alive still, and his name is David Silic, and he was the president and publisher of the Jacksonville Business Journal and how I started my career with American City Business Journal. He's still a friend to this day and just saw what he believed in me was that I could be that person, and he took the time to teach me and to sit me down and to really show me how to become that person, and I'm forever grateful to him for that.
And you did become that person. So, Bridget, I want to thank you so much for sharing your new journey.
Thank you.
Your leadership advice, and most of all, your warmth and compassion. And, you know, folks, I just want to say that we're going to talk another time with Bridget about her philanthropic efforts, because in addition to everything else she's doing, she does so many good deeds in our community. Thank you, Bridget.
Thank you so much.
For Radio St. Pete, I'm your host, Nanette Weiser. Until we see you next time.